Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers 280, the box office report for the week ending May 14th, 2017.
I'm just waiting for the Snarkitude to start, but that's not this episode.
Yeah, the next episode will probably be...
You wait and see how advanced our Snarkitude is.
Ripe with Snarkitude.
It's bubbling.
Yes, so... Let's go around the room and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Dan.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Joe is out. It is Mother's Day. Now, he is not a mother, but he has chosen to spend it with the mother of his children, presumably his own mother. My mother's dead, so I don't... And the mother of my children. No. Yeah, I think she kind of gave up that moniker a long time ago. So that's my excuse. I guess you guys are just...
Pecocks!
Or...
that's besides the point.
Yeah.
No, I'm sure you have wonderful things planned for the mothers and mothers of well, maybe not the mother of your children, Kevin, but you have things planned, I'm sure, but it will be later in the day.
Yes, exactly.
So that's how we spend our Mother's Day, for whatever that's worth.
Yes.
So
happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day. Here's three dudes.
So, I guess real quick, shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on iTunes. You can go there, rate, review, subscribe. We greatly appreciate it. It helps us tremendously. People that were kind enough to share the show this week. Let's see if I can do this because my computer crapped out. So, Dustin at Nerds at Night Gaming, Jason Michael, Julianne Jordan, Chris Sanders, Griffin Fox Smith, Tammy Sherman Powers, Brent Smith, or if you prefer the fancier Dijon version, Brenton Smith.
Is it spicy?
Yeah. It's just fancy, you know.
Hold up. You think...
Oh, no, not Dijon. Grey Poupon.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I'm like...
But I don't think... You think it's spicy?
Isn't usually like Dijon... Don't they usually have a spicy Dijon variant? That's what I think of when I think of Dijon.
Do you think Dijon... Where do you guys fall? The Scoville.
I'm not saying that it's that hot. It's just it has the spicy flavor.
It's more savory.
Yeah.
I won't eat it.
Really? Well, no, you won't.
It's not regular mustard. If I wanted something, I didn't like. Especially in my defense, and like I already know I'm a weird eater, but in my defense, what do you think I'm putting mustard on?
The only thing I can think of
a hot dog,
or
right?
A burger. I do ketchup and mustard.
I would do ketchup and mustard on a burger, but if I'm just putting mustard on something, it's mustard only, it's a hot dog. So if I'm eating a hot dog, don't fancy that. I don't know. I don't need a fancy hot dog.
But I would take you for, you know, chicken tenders, honey mustard.
Some people like, no, barbecue. Barbecue all the way. And honestly, if you make your chicken tenders right, I don't even need that. I'll just eat them.
And I'm with you. I don't like mustard, and I'd never use honey mustard on chicken tenders either.
I like mustard, but I don't like...
See, I hate regular mustard, but the only kind I will do is like a Dijon, like a... fancier, you know,
your fancy pants,
the seeds in it, you know, or whatever, not the
mustard and I like mustard, but there's always something that kind of creeps me out about mustard, in that, do you realize this about mustard? It has no calories.
That just makes it magical.
How does mustard have no calories, and why aren't we replicating this with other condiments?
One of my favorite condiments, hot sauce, no calories.
Yeah,
amazing.
And hot sauce has calories.
Nope, zero calories.
And hot sauce, you know, spicy food tend to increase your metabolism, yeah. So you burn calories.
So it's like
they're
negative.
Actually, yeah, negative calories. How about
so
that?
When I'm eating healthy, you know, vegetables.
Mustard soup. Mustard, with mustard hot and sauce. Hot sauce soup.
Oh, gross.
This but, is beautiful. We're
but,
done.
But hot sauce for me is that Invent magical. That. Yeah, that's that magical food for me, though, because when you're eating healthy and you just have grilled chicken breasts, if you're eating vegetables, you put hot sauce on it.
I put it on everything.
And it adds the flavor to it, and it's nothing, no calories.
I'm all about the hot sauce. Everything.
What was that hot sauce where it was like, I put that on everything?
Was it Frank's?
Yeah, I think that's Frank's. Yeah. Frank's Red Hot Sauce or whatever it's called. Yeah.
So where was I?
You were at Brenton or Brent Fancy.
Yes. Ken Mills from the Zilch podcast, also from Podkist. Travis Tewitt, Jason Weese. You'll see Kevin Doesn't Count. Jason Herndon, Librarian Cynthia. Brett Schulte and Linnea Thunsell. So thank you guys for sharing the show. We greatly appreciate it. Don't forget, we do... have our Facebook page, facebook.com/realspoilers, and you can also join the League of Show Sharers group. And the difference between the page and the group is that it's a little bit more conversational in the group. You can post things and people will see it. It won't just be buried over on a wall. And there's a lot more back and forth, even though there are fewer members in the group as opposed to the page. So join us.
It's like quality over quantity.
Yes, come on in. The water's fine. So I believe that's it for our shameless plugs. Boy, we have a lot fewer tangents when Joe is here. I'm sensing
this is interesting. How this show
we might have found the culprit,
which is okay. Wrestling, Monster Squad.
Yeah, and then
that's true.
And then something racially insensitive that Kevin will have to edit out.
Yeah,
and comic books.
Let's turn our eyes to the box office. Kevin has his. Missing bead abacus at the ready.
Oh, don't. It's like we're talking about the next 50 Shades episode.
I mean, to be fair, you guys decided to do this after a Saturday night. Yes, so
one bead. He should be able to maintain.
Guardians opened last week, so I don't need those extra beads anyway. So Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 on top once again, $60.3 million, a 59% drop from its gigantic opening weekend last weekend. $243.5 million domestic is its two-week total in the States, but another $325 million overseas brings it to $525 million in technically 3 weeks. It's been overseas for 3 weeks. It's our second here. So half a billion in 3 weeks.
Wow.
That's money right there. It had a budget of $200 million, so...
This is craziness. I mean, when you think about, you know, and because of this... You know, James Gunn is in a position where he's just kind of, you know, he's been wanting to do Adam Warlock for a while. It's just 10 years ago, 5 years ago, I don't think we would have said, oh, yeah, when they introduced Adam Warlock to the MCU. I mean, that's a deep dive.
Yes, absolutely.
Even for, like, the fans.
Yeah.
That's it.
I mean, I'm a comic book guy. I don't know that I've ever read a story with Adam Warlock in it.
I remember... really being into the character, and I think James Gunn and I might be around the same age.
Right.
And but I remember, and it was like in the 70s, and I remember like reading it in like a Kroger. So it's when we had Kroger in our area. So
one just opened in Troy.
Okay.
So it's within 36 miles.
But it's been a long, long time, and it wasn't like the character. I know that the character's popped up, but it's just bizarre to think like, wow. I mean, not just that, but I mean, this is one of the properties that we were all like,
yeah, that we're like, okay. Well, this is where it might go off the rails.
Yeah,
it's just amazing.
At this point, Marvel has earned the right to not be second guessed or doubted until the movie comes out and you judge it. I mean, there's no saying anymore that they're gonna make that movie. I mean, we did that with Guardians, we did that with Ant-Man, we did that with Doctor Strange. They're all, I mean, Ant-Man was good. I really enjoyed it. I don't think you'd call it great, but it was good. It was solid.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that, I mean, if that's their weakest entry into a, you know, more obscure character, then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they planning to make another Ant-Man, or is he just going to be a guy that kind of pops up?
It's Ant-Man and Wasp.
Yeah.
That's right.
I'm pretty sure they're going down. They said it's going to be something like they haven't done before, which makes me think it's going to be probably like an episode of Heart to Heart. you know, I think it's going to be like a couple,
right?
You know, not a heist movie, but I think it's going to be a, you know, a couple team up,
right?
You know, kind of comedy.
I love the way they keep taking established film genres and kind of lacquering them over their superhero characters.
Well, they take their template,
yeah,
and then they just like put a little thing on top, and then
they mix it with a genre. They stir lightly,
and then
they produce a hit.
It really is. I mean, because if you think about, you know, of course, Thor being like a faux Shakespearean movie, right. And then, you know, even more recently, Winter Soldier. To think that that's like an espionage thriller,
right?
That just happens to have Captain America. But I mean, what a compelling story and great writing.
Yeah,
you know, these are what really sets Marvel apart. Is that these are not good superhero movies; they're good movies, good films.
There's Black Panther. I think that's the one. Which, again, people would have been, you know, very people excited about it, or people had no idea.
I'm very excited for that one.
But then Civil War came out, and everybody's like, ooh,
yeah,
more of him.
That's probably one I'm more excited for than anything coming up, with the exception of Infinity War, because I've got to see how they do that. But, I mean, Black Panther in Civil War, like, what a great character. I thought the costume looked great. I thought the character was good. His backstory was compelling. I like that actor, Chadwick Boseman. How do you say it?
I don't know.
Boseman. And they came in, I mean... They brought him in fully realized, too. It's not like they were like, well, we'll just see how people react. No, they were like, this is like he had a lot riding on his performance. And, you know, to your point, the character and the costume, like they came in and it was like, no, this thing's got to be ready to go.
Right.
Yeah. And this is one example where Marvel has done this, where they did basically what DC keeps trying to do, but they did it right. So like. You know, so Black Panther didn't have his movie first. He actually was introduced in an Avengers type movie. I think Civil War is the best Avengers movie we've seen yet. You know,
that's pretty.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, the first one was great, but it was the first. You know, and I think there's that, just like the first Guardians has that nostalgia and first time kind of thing. But Civil War is really, really good, and you know, they introduced Black Panther there, but actually gave him a backstory, gave him a compelling character and development and that stuff that, you know, DC keeps trying to slam these characters, like Batman's introduction was in a Superman movie or what was supposed to be a Man of Steel sequel. And it's like, no, don't, you know, they're rushing it. And so this is the only case I can think of where Marvel's done this, but then look how well they executed it.
Well, you know, and it's interesting. It's like the public consciousness doesn't seem to, even though there was, once we all saw the pics of the Inhumans, everybody just like had the same reaction, which was like, oh god,
it looks
like subpar cosplay.
It looks like Halloween costumes.
It looks bad. And then especially Black Bolt, I'm like, oh good, don't put a mask on him, because you know that's one of the coolest things about that character. Thanks. But it's that nobody seems to lump that in with the rest of the Marvel stuff. Like, we know that there's some weird divide between, like, there's the movies and then the Netflix stuff. And those two are, like, in this, like, they're on a shelf.
Right.
You know, and the TV stuff, you know, the Netflix stuff is like, nah, it's like, they get a little section of the shelf.
Right.
Minus Iron Fist.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Ugh.
And then, again, don't put the mask on them, please.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, or a costume. And then you've got the ABC stuff, which is under, like, a different, you know, head. And, you know, I thought Agent Carter was awesome. But I think what helped that is also it was a very short season, like maybe 8 episodes or whatever.
Yeah.
That's how they should do it.
And then, like, S.H.I.E.L.D., which somehow got picked up again, and I'm like, oh, I stopped watching it.
Never seen it. Heard it was terrible. Yeah, I just can't.
Just too many episodes to try to stretch out over, 24 episodes a season.
It's a lot. Like, I watched the first, like, 2 or 3, and I was just like, I am not interested, and I bailed.
Right. But now the Inhumans come in, and it's funny that, like, that's it's all Marvel, you know.
Yeah.
But people aren't like, ooh.
But you know, they need to. I am a firm believer in the HBO method of releasing shows. If you're going to tell one story arc, 8 episodes, 10 episodes.
Yeah.
I mean, True Detective, 8 episodes. Game of Thrones, 10, 11, whatever they end up falling on. I mean, you can tell a compelling season of television and put the quality, put more budget into it. We don't need 20-something episodes. That's ridiculous to tell one story arc.
Well, see, Game of Thrones is like, it's whatever they need. So they're basically like, well, this one, 9. This one, 13. Like,
that's cool.
Sure.
In the same way you'd write a novel.
Yes.
You know, I mean, sometimes they're 800 pages, sometimes they're 400 pages. You don't know.
Absolutely. This,
but it's really, it's just, it's a leftover business model. I mean, that just used to be, it used to be a show would have, you know, 23 episodes, they'd run them no repeats back to back, and then, or 26, and then when it was over, they'd run them again.
Yes.
And then when that was over, it was time for a new season. And there are all sorts of stories if you go through TV history of, like, shows that became hits in the summer because the big hit they were up against went into repeats. And so people were like, well, I've already seen Mannix. I guess I'll sample this. And, and you know, and like that's, I think Archie Bunker became a hit that way. I think MASH became a hit that way.
Yeah.
You saw a lot of shows that went, because you had so fewer options.
And now we're on demand.
And now it's on demand.
It's a completely different. Yeah. You know, you don't, you aren't going to just be channel surfing in the summer and pick up on whatever. It's like, no, you're going to hear good things and you're going to go find it and watch what you want to watch.
And I will say, in this age of what they're calling peak TV, like my TV watching has changed drastically where there's, in terms of how much latitude I'll give a show. You know, like it used to be like, oh, well, this is something I kind of like, and I, you know, I'll power through, I'll stick with it for a little bit. Where now I'm like, man, if I'm bored in episode two, I'm like, there's great stuff I could be watching.
Yeah.
Why am I powering through hoping this gets better?
You're right.
Well, Ellie, my wife, she doesn't. She won't give an episode two. She will abandon the show mid credits. I'm out. I'm like, whoa,
Comic Sans. No, I'm not watching any show with a font like that.
Hold up. And that's what happened with Westworld. And so she's like, you can watch this without me. This is
God, Westworld was so good.
Well, the funny thing is, so I watched it without her, and then what she thought was happening wasn't happening. And so I the next day, I was like, I think you might want to rethink that. So we watched it again. She's like, oh, that was really good. I'm like, okay. So sometimes that can work against you if a show, you know, has a head fake.
Yeah.
But also because of on demand, it used to be like if you were watching a show and it got good, you couldn't circle back around and catch up. You know what I mean? Like that wasn't an option when we were growing up.
Until repeats,
you know? Yeah. And so
you kind of stick with it to see if it was going to get good.
Right, because you didn't want it to get good and then you weren't on board. Yeah. So those days are long gone.
I think what we can all be thankful for is that we're living in this modern on-demand world of television, that we don't have to do that anymore. You know, it's our choice when we want to watch it, what we want to watch. You know, I just watched True Detective for the first time, season one, this past year. So it's like, you know, I heard good things. I just didn't have time. Yeah. I was busy, whatnot, you know, heard it was great. I just got it on demand, watched it all. I'm like, this is amazing. But, you know, it was so easy for me to grab it off HBO, you know, and especially with HBO. What's great is if you subscribe to HBO or Go or Now, you have the entire catalog.
Yeah.
Shows from 20 years ago, 30 years ago, they never retire things. So it's not like a movie that plays on HBO for a month.
I'll give you three examples of HBO not providing stuff that they should.
Okay.
From the Earth to the Moon, Tales from the Crypt, and Carnival.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Did they ever get Larry Sanders on there? I know they had some issues with that.
That's on something.
I think it was on something weird like Crackle or something.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So there might be some weird rights, but for the most part, you can go back and watch Oz. You can go back and watch.
No, you're right. You're right.
Anything.
It's just those. I'm like, From the Earth to the Moon. Come on, man. Yeah. That was so good. Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah, I would want to go back, but I guess there's a lot of different rights that are just too confusing. So, but yeah, Guardians having a great second week. So, I mean, over $500 million in 3 weeks worldwide on a $200 million budget. So that's going to be another huge success. I think the first one ended up around close to $800 million, and so in 3 weeks this being around 500 and still rolling out, it just hit Japan this weekend, so there's still some big countries that are, you know, rolling out in this week. So I think we're gonna see another pretty big total next weekend.
Well, especially since, you know, King Arthur is not doing what they had hoped, so there's a lot of breathing room in the marketplace.
Yeah, absolutely. Number two, Snatched. That's the new Amy Schumer movie with Goldie Hawn. That made $16 million. So that came in a little lower than expectations. I was hearing somewhere around 20 for that. So let me see if I do have a budget on it. I don't know what's 42.
Did you see that? I did see it.
$42 million budget on this one.
It was not very good.
That's what I've heard.
It was, the problem with this movie, one, it was really short. It was like an hour and 30, including credits. Like, it was,
which for a comedy, that's what you want.
Which for comedy, no, I agree. Yeah. I'm glad that they, you know, that they didn't go super long. But like, by in today's world,
Judd Apatow,
and that's her background, right? He produced Trainwreck, and But it was really short, and it didn't know what it wanted to be. Like, I don't feel like this was written for her. I could be wrong, but it felt like it was something that was retooled for her.
I think Amy Schumer developed it.
Did she?
She did.
Well, it didn't feel like it.
Her and what's the daughter, Goldie's daughter, Kate Hudson. Her and Kate Hudson and some other people like worked on it.
Well, it only had one screenwriter credit, which normally is a pretty good sign, right? Like normally, you know, it didn't feel like, if you don't like Amy Schumer, this movie has too much Amy Schumer. And if you do like Amy Schumer, it doesn't have enough Amy Schumer. She's in it, but I feel like in a lot of ways she's kind of toned down. And there's a couple key scenes or key lines where they're classic Amy Schumer that you would expect. But there's a lot of it that's just kind of like wacky hijinks on the road as they're on the run.
Hmm. Now, this is the same writer as The Heat, which I enjoyed.
Yeah.
That's my favorite Melissa McCarthy movie. I think that was the best. And I don't know if that's more because I really enjoyed Sandra Bullock's straight man to her. You know, but I thought that's the most tame and best performance that I can remember from her. But and Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
So we've got The Heat, Ghostbusters, and Snatched. So you can kind of see this writer.
And I like Ghostbusters. I didn't have a problem with it.
I did not either.
It wasn't as good. It wasn't as good as the original. No, it was better than two.
Yeah.
I mean, I think one of the big problems that you're going to start. I know Trainwreck was a huge movie, and that was, I mean, financially big success. A lot of people really enjoyed it. But I think we're going to start seeing a lot of. It's going to be a lot harder for Amy Schumer because she's becoming the new Dane Cook. She's. I mean,
that Netflix special did not do her any favors.
Was terrible.
And I know she was targeted by right wing people to downvote that, but it also
was awful.
It wasn't very good.
It was not funny. Yeah. And also, I mean, have you seen the videos comparing her stand up to how many jokes she's stolen?
No, I haven't.
It's blatant.
Yeah.
I mean, it is like jokes that. I mean, when you talk about like Dane Cook stealing Louis C.K.'s jokes, and watch the videos that compare Amy Schumer over the last 10 years of her jokes. And it's like, there's no way. And she's in an interview saying, I didn't know, blah, blah, blah. And like, I get that things can be circumstantial.
Maybe parallel think.
But to watch the videos. And so she's becoming the new Dane
I will
Cook
say that, like,
I don't know.
When I did that Mystery Science Theater 3000 Writers Workshop where they gave us a short and we all sat in a room and we came in with jokes. We sent our jokes to them ahead of time and they kind of assembled them. And then we would see everybody's jokes without their names attached. And you know, and I would see it a lot in that room where it was like, you know, if there was 10 of us, you know, there might be one, you know, multiple times there would be a riff where, you know, three of us, four of us had all, if not had the same joke, like the same variation on a joke.
But you're riffing the same subject matter.
But we are, it's hard being a woman and the women all want sex and
she still has the world to choose from where you were, you know, a short.
Sure.
I get where in your case, I think it's.
I'm just saying that I would. The distinction I would make is I don't think that she's breaking any new ground from a topic standpoint.
Sure.
Whereas it's harder to steal a joke from a Louis C.K. because he's not writing jokes, right?
Yeah,
he's telling jokes from a very personal standpoint. Chris Rock is the same way. Mm-hmm. Like the true greats these days, that's what they do. They're not joke writers in the way that, you know, Bob Hope had a team of them. And, you know, let me tell you, and I love Bob Hope, but it's a different era.
It
of
was
comedy.
A joke,
right?
It was a digestible.
Yeah,
here we go. Set up punchline.
Right. Where in today's world, it's like it's coming from such a personal place. They're really more like comic storytellers.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. I think that's hurting her. I think her perception from her, you know, former fans and in the comedy community, I think that's hurting her. And then the movie not looking very good didn't do any favors.
I didn't think it looked good either.
Not appealing. Everyone that I heard talk to about it that had seen previews was like, oh, that looks terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't look good. So anyway, $16 million on a $40 million. And that's, you know, it's only going to go down from here. So I don't know.
Well,
we'll see.
Yeah. She might just swerve into something else.
Yeah.
You know, go more drama.
Yeah, that's true.
You can kind of get cast against type, and that usually
helps,
you know, right the ship for a lot of actors and actresses.
Yeah, very good point. Number three, the movie of the week, King Arthur, Legend of the Snore. I mean, Sword. Sorry about this. Maybe
I didn't even know there was a subtitle, you know.
King Arthur, Legend of the Sword.
That's but see, then it should be called Excalibur. Legend of the Sword or King Arthur, Legend of the Man.
Yeah, how about...
Or King Arthur, legend.
Yeah, or how about Arthur, you know, grooming of a king? Because he's not a king in this movie until the end.
Well, it's like, just weird because...
Spoiler alert, like, this is not a King Arthur story. Okay, this is an Arthur story.
Or like Tarzan? Or,
Yeah, it's an Arthur story where he becomes King Arthur.
I just... that. Okay.
We'll
leave it there because bothers me.
Wait till next episode. There's plenty of material. But $14.6 million. Dan, would you like to guess the budget on King Arthur Legend of the Snore?
I'm going
to
give this one like $170.
$175 million.
Well done.
Opening to a $14 million.
I think the difference between your guess and the final number was Guy Ritchie's Soul.
We'll get into that next episode, but Guy Ritchie doesn't mean what Guy Ritchie used to mean anyway. It's not the same, you know, but we'll get into that more next episode.
What's his next thing that he's attached to something?
Aladdin.
Oh, yes.
I'm a bit worried.
We made the same
face. Bit worried.
Well, you know, Disney can detach. They have done that.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Fantastic Four guy.
Yeah.
He got detached.
Yeah. I think that there's going to be some people second guessing that decision after this. But until next time, number four, The Fate of the Furious, still bringing in a boatload of cash, $5 million.
They're driving boats now?
Yeah.
Submarine.
Submarine.
Submarine full of cash.
Sure. Oh, potato. $5 million.
Wait, they're driving potatoes now?
You better believe it. They're running out of
things. Must be huge in Ireland.
It is. That's only in the extended Irish director's cut, though, where they brought in an Irish director.
Because the Irish can't cut anything short. Poetry, drinking.
Oh, goodness. Morocco. So, number four.
Oh, he's probably right there.
Yeah. I'm right there.
Oh,
yeah.
It's just fact.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so, I'm partially Irish, so I could attest to
this. Wait, do you want to roll your eyes at me?
Okay.
Hang on.
Nice.
I bought you a maraca, Dan.
Oh my gosh, Dan has a maraca. Like,
in the last episode, we talked about Dan needs a sound effect for rolling his eyes. We would use a maraca, so bought Dan a maraca.
Thank you.
So now when he rolls his
Joe's
eyes,
that here, so
yeah, there's a lot less usage for it.
I won't get a blister.
That's true. You want to ramp up.
Yeah,
you know,
this is a good practice episode.
Yeah. And now, welcome to the show, Dan Foley Grainy.
I have produced a lot of songs for our listeners that
you have
show shares this week. Yes. I'm very tired. I'm hoping people realize that I'm like cribbing off of other songs, though.
Yeah, I think they understand that you're like the Weird Al of welcome songs.
Because I'm like, I hope they know that was like set to, you know, the Star Spangled Banner or Back in Black. I don't know if it comes because I don't say set to Back in Black.
Right.
Please. Yeah. You need to set up.
I need
all
to start doing that. Yeah. Sorry.
So The Fate of the Furious brought in $5 million. That's a 42% drop in week five. So it's up to $214 million domestic. But this is where it gets really crazy. And I know we've mentioned this every week, but the overseas take for Fast 8, or whatever you want to call this thing now, $978 million. It is almost a billion overseas. You know, we talk about these big movies and them making like $1 billion, $1.1 billion. Beauty and the Beast is up there. It's a little over $1.1 billion. But Fast 8 making $978 million overseas alone.
Yeah.
$250 in the States. Like, it's just nuts. $250 million budget. So, five times...
You know, there's got to be some sort of weird science to this, and maybe it's because cars, other than, you know, where the driver's seat is positioned, are the same everywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
Cars are cool.
You know
any
what I mean?
Country,
like, there's
right.
no cultural like differences. It's like, well, cars go fast, they go slow,
right?
And they crash and go boom.
And it's so like it's weird because even though it's like they're now working for some government thing, it's not like this kind of pro-America thing that would turn off other countries potentially. Like, it's just kind of like, oh, it's just generic government.
Right.
And they're very smart with the cast. It's an international cast. It always is.
Are.
They always swap out different actors of different nationalities, different races. It is an international movie. And I mean, obviously, they're not going to stop making these anytime soon. We're going to get a spinoff. We're going to get a sequel. It's, you know,
a Broadway musical.
Yeah.
Space.
It's got to be coming.
They don't have enough self-restraint to not end up there eventually.
I'm telling you right now, I see it. I'm going to predict this because it's easy right now. Ludacris piloting a spaceship. It's going to happen. We're going to see him be like, oh, this is crazy, and he's piloting a spaceship. It's going to happen. Like,
you know
it's
what's
not even...
funny about this is that all this is happening and Michael Bay's never touched it.
Right.
And that's just got to... I bet you like at night he's like...
and they're all the better for it.
That's why he keeps trying with Transformers.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to make that.
He's like, how did I not think of this? It's so simple.
Yeah. Because it's so his thing.
But people love this movie for the exact same reason they love Transformers.
Well, I know.
They are the same genre, let's say. I mean, I know one's robot. Well, they're cars, actually. It is the same exact genre.
Yeah.
But I mean, the big bombastic, you know, and Fast Five is where they reinvented the franchise, you know, because it was more street racing. The first, the second, the third, the fourth, even when they reunited the original cast, it was more street racing centered. They're driving around the desert or whatever they were doing in that one. But Five, when introduced The Rock, is where they became superheroes. Mm-hmm. And then the stunt guys said they had to one up one another. I mean the same guys, but they kept one upping it, which is what sold more tickets and more tickets. And finally now we're at this point where they're driving cars out of buildings and piling them up. Like, those are practical effects. So I know, Tom, I know how you mentioned, you know, a ton of CG in this last Fast and Furious movie, but you'd be surprised how much was practical. They actually wrecked
tons drove on a sheet of ice with a submarine coming up from beneath them.
No, that stuff not. But the car stuff, like when they pile up cars, they're piling up cars and dropping them off roofs. And I mean, it is amazing what they do with these movies, and that's what they come for. And Transformers is the same way. It's a giant robot stomping on buildings, and you know,
those are practical effects too.
Yeah, those are giant robots. Yeah.
Now that impresses
me. No, that's the island. That's a B-roll from the island that they've repurposed. So, but anyway, F8, $1.25 billion basically at this point, and in 5 weeks. That's absolutely incredible from a financial standpoint. Number five, The Boss Baby. I guess there's not a lot of kids movies out. That's one I'm surprised to see this high on the list in week seven. 4.3 million is a 27% drop. It has brought in $162 million domestic. I still don't have a budget on it. I think we Wikipedia'd it one time and thought like 70 maybe, but it has brought in another almost 300 million foreign, about 280. It is approaching 450 million worldwide on whatever budget, 70-ish, whatever we think. So that's huge.
Yeah, this thing just keeps chugging along for them. I think even they're kind of surprised by how well this is doing. Yeah.
It's the lack of competition. And I'm not saying it's a terrible movie or anything. You saw it and you thought it was okay,
yeah,
right? Fine.
Yeah, its budget was 125.
125, so yeah. 440 on a 125.
That seems very high for this movie.
With a 125?
Yes.
Yeah.
But you know animation. It takes a long time. And then you've got Alec Baldwin who draws
this isn't like groundbreaking animation.
Right.
No,
that's fair. Yeah.
I mean, it's... And the voice cast, it's like, you know...
Well, you got Steve Buscemi. Come on. You know.
Yeah, it just doesn't...
There's your 50.
Really high. It seems a little high.
There's your 50 mil right
And that's
there.
Not including marketing, right? Even though the market was kind of like,
Yeah.
I don't know. I have a theory that a lot of people are still seeing it because they can't take their kids to Guardians.
Yeah.
Because there was a bunch of people, I think they wanted to take their kids to Guardians, were like, oh.
Yeah.
I'm like, no.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing about Guardians, too, and, you know, we kind of touched on it in our review last week, but it's not necessarily... I mean, I don't know how you describe violence, but it's not gory. It's not gratuitous, but there is killing, quite a bit of it.
Yeah,
so it's not gratuitous violence, but as far as deaths and...
There's some stuff that to a child would be terrifying.
Yeah.
Like the dead dissolving and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I wouldn't take kids to it, but, you know.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, Boss Baby doing great in its seventh week. So that one's really chugging along. Until did we ever figure out what the next kids movie is?
Isn't it Cars
or is Despicable Me?
Yeah, it's got to be Despicable Me.
I don't know
which
one comes out first.
Yeah, Despicable Me.
One of them's coming out, like, I think July 4th weekend.
Yeah, I think that's Despicable Me. So until then, you know, it's got a couple more weeks left in it that it's probably going to do pretty well. But speaking of a lot of money and another kids movie, Beauty and the Beast. 3.6 million is only a 28% drop. That one is in week nine. It has made $492 million domestically and another 698, so another 700 million overseas. It is at almost $1.2 billion, and it is out on video June 6th. That is a 2.5 month release window.
Wow.
From theater to Blu-ray.
Well, I heard in the overseas version, they're driving cars.
Yeah.
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 A lot of car chases in that one.
Well, they just took in Japan, Mario Kart.
Right.
And they just put Beast and Belle and Princess Peach. They just turned her into Belle. And Beast is Bowser. I mean, it's very easy.
And the Eiffel Tower is actually a giant robot.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
It transforms.
Yeah.
They're hedging all their bets.
Yes.
They are. But that's incredible. And Dan, I was talking to Tom about this online, but movies used to be in the 3 to 6 month range for release from theater to home video, but 2.5 months. I mean, the closest thing I can remember to this happening was Zootopia, which was 3 months.
Yeah, they're trying to. The studios would love to close that window.
That's what I'm saying, because right now, at this point in week 9, Beauty and the Beast is all theater money.
Yeah.
And I think they honestly said, well, you know, we're still selling tickets, but these tickets aren't going in our pockets.
No,
Why would they not just sell Blu-rays when families, I mean, if they have to buy 2 tickets, that's $20 at least. Yeah. Why would families not just buy the disc and own it? And they're going to own it anyway.
It's a battle. Well, see, the thing is that the theater owners, they still have, I mean, that's part of the reason why you see fewer independent theaters or fewer long-standing chains. We have one that in our city that, you know, was Werenberg, and now they've been purchased by Marcus.
And they'd been around for literally 100 years.
Yeah.
Maybe 110.
And the reason that's happening is because the only way to, well, lots of reasons, but those theaters that are the national chains, your Lowe's, your AMC's, your Marcus, is you know, it's how they maintain some sort of, you know, clout with the studios, because they still have the big studio expos where they like show all the movies and the actors come out and they give awards to each other and know. But that's where a lot of those battle lines are drawn, is because they're trying to, you know, the studios are trying to keep them in theater longer, one, because it's money. I meant the theater chains.
Yeah.
The theater chains are trying to keep them in the theaters longer, and the studios are like, well, you can have it for a little while.
Yeah, the studios are wanting to move to a system where it's like they can come out at the same time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. They would rather. I mean,
and that's where, like, because what happens is, like, an AMC will say, well, then we're just not going to show it at any screen.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a dangerous. I mean, they really are in control, and it's tricky, because it's like they do want distribution to make money, but if they feel they have a good enough product where people can just stream it, because we do live in this on-demand society, they're going to make their money.
Yeah.
Did you see what the company founded by Sean Parker is trying to do? Napster guy?
Yeah.
$50 for a home. I would pay that in a second. Split it with 2 or 3 people.
Yeah, that's what I said. I go, you know, people, when they're like, oh my God, $50.
That's
I
what
go,
they're scoffing
$50,
at.
But they're not telling you how many people you could pile in your living room.
Right.
And popcorn, chicken tenders, chicken wing, you know, whatever you order at the movies. I'm telling you, if I could pay $50 the week of release and have 2 or 3 friends come over, I don't care. Split it two ways. I'll pay $25.
That's, I don't know. That's, I would demand that you have some other options on your mustard.
Yeah. But seriously, it's like, that's a genius idea. So right now, in an interview, he said the big hold up for his company is people scoffing at the price. People on average would be willing to pay $35, they said. That's what people are wanting.
I don't get. Like, look what people pay for pay-per-views.
Because
they're
not thinking about it. They're not thinking about all the concessions and what adds up. They're just like, $50, but they don't get it. They can make their own popcorn for 50 cents instead of $7.
Right.
Their own soda for 50 cents instead of $7. So $50, you've got
it's people not thinking creatively.
You can pause and pee at your leisure.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So I'm all for it. Right now, J.J. Abrams is in favor of it, and there's a couple other big directors that are on board for it, but then you've got people like Todd Phillips who hate it. He says the movies are meant to be seen in theaters, but what he's not looking at is, that's great, Todd Phillips, and I get what he's saying. There is an experience and the history of going to the theater and all that, but people aren't doing it.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? It's great for the people that like to do that, but they're missing a huge market of people. I know my age, people in the digital on-demand era, I'll just wait till it comes on DVD.
I also see the logic of, you know, people are clearly still going to the movies. I mean, you know, you can see by the numbers. And so why cater to the people that are going to give you their money in 6 weeks and risk losing the people that are giving you their money now and in 6 weeks.
Right. Well, it's a tricky, I mean, that's what they have to juggle, certainly. Yeah. But you have a lot more people, you have a lot more potential outside of the box office than
and it. Yeah. I think the other problem that I never really hear discussed is the stigma of it, in that there's always been this line of demarcation between a movie that gets released theatrically and a direct-to-home video movie.
Of course.
You know?
Yes.
And if you take the theater away from the equation, what differentiates those two?
Yeah.
You know? And
well, we've seen plenty of movies that have been big movies and theatrical releases that should not have been.
Right. Sure. Yeah.
But because they get a theatrical release, they're held to a higher standard
right.
than movies that, you know,
I think
our direct to video.
I think it's going to be the name, the distributor on those straight to video movies. I'm not saying that Warner Brothers or these companies don't put out a Christmas Story 2, because they do. That's WB's sure. arm.
I mean,
whatever.
Disney's got a whole wing of it. You know,
what's the Bigger Fatter Liar? You know, mm-hmm. the Cody Banks, Frankie Muniz, Big mm-hmm. Fat Liar. Mm-hmm. There was a sequel recently, Bigger Fatter Liar. Barry Bostwick was in it playing like the big bad guy, and then gotcha. Some other kid,
and
Frankie Muniz.
And there's
but
been
like,
a lot of that. There's a War Games 2,
yeah.
and
yeah.
they did like two or three yeah. Lost Boys movies. There's a Slapshot yeah. 2 and 3.
I so mean, studios yeah. do yeah. put their names, oh, yeah. but for the most part, direct VOD movies don't have a big studio distributor on it. The ones that do are are few and far between, right? So I still think that you would have a way to figure it out because of the name, right? right? But yeah, I get what you mean. It really is. There that line, that distinct line drawn right. in the sand would be blurrier.
And I think the other problem you're going to have is long term, you're not going to have movie stars anymore. Everybody's going to be a TV star.
Yeah. But look where a lot of the movie stars are now. They're finding a home on good TV.
Right.
Like, TV is,
right.
I mean, this is the golden age. This is the best era for TV that we've yeah. ever seen.
Yeah, a lot of there's because of the premium channels and the HBOs and stuff like yeah. that. There isn't the stigma. Television doesn't
sure.
have the stigma, and that's happened with network television too. But there's a certain caliber or quality that you're afforded with an HBO. And so we do see not only directors, not only stars. You know.
Yeah, and you don't have the 25-episode commitment. You can come in, you can work for 6 weeks, yeah. film 8 episodes, and go back to making movies.
Yeah.
As opposed to if you commit to network television show, I mean, that's your life. And if it gets picked up, it's your life for the next decade.
Well, and it's funny because, like, True Detective is a great example. For Woody Harrelson, it was like, yeah, okay, because he still has, you know, he's a bankable working movie star.
Sure.
And Matthew McConaughey has kind of had a roller coaster career, and he was kind of, you know, at a lower, he's not bottom out, but he was lower. But because of True Detective, that's the McConaughey's coming
yeah.
up.
Yeah.
And Dallas Buyers Club.
Well, because I think he was so skinny because he was right. filming Dallas
and
Buyers Club. So that was
before
that.
But it shot
that.
Him right back up yeah. and reminded everybody. And it was yeah. also a longer narrative that he was able to sort of, you know, really chew on it a little bit. People were like, oh my God, he's really good.
Yeah.
He wasn't going to get that out of a movie.
No.
And especially because nobody was going to put him in a movie that would do that.
Yeah.
So that's why you see this, you know.
Yeah. So Beauty and the Beast does come out on Blu-ray June 6th. It was released in theaters March 17th. 2.5 months for that. So something's changing here, and I like it. I hope the window starts shortening, honestly, but we'll have to see how much tighter they can get it. Coming in at number 7, How to Be a Latin Lover dropped 40% with $3.1 million, $25 million domestically so far. I think that's where Joe actually is today.
Just taking notes.
Yeah. So. Yeah. it does not have a foreign release, oddly enough, but it is an American comedy.
Maybe we're the foreign release.
Right, right.
I think we are.
I mean, with a title like that, I think it's kind of confusing, but it's an American release with an American cast. Yeah. It's not really a...
I know, it sounds like it would be a Spanish language
right,
film or something. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, that one is still making some money. And coming in at number 8, The Circle, which we talked about last week, that confusing movie about whatever it's about. $1.7 million is a 57% drop in what they call week 3. I feel like the first week was a very limited release. So week 2 or 3, whatever you want to say, $18 million domestic. And none of us had seen that, right?
Correct.
Okay. $18 million budget, no foreign take. So it's made 18 on an 18 domestically. It's going to be out of the top 10 next week. So
yeah.
I guess that's all that one wrote. Number 9, Gifted. So that one still hanging around. $1.3 million is only a 34% drop in week 6. So that one is $21 million. And I don't know if we had a budget, but that's the one with Chris Evans. It's a religious movie, right? One of those.
I honestly don't remember.
I think it's
more inspirational.
Yeah,
it's one of those types of films. So it's hanging around. It's got its audience and making some money. So that's good for it. And rounding out the top 10, Smurfs: The Lost Village, $1.15 million, a 37% drop in week 6, $42 million. So not quite making the Boss Baby money. Unfortunately for that one. And I don't know if I have a... Give me just one second. I'm not sure if I have a budget on that one either. The box office chart, since we're finally doing this one on time, are a little goofy.
Yeah.
Yeah, because on Friday it didn't even open in the top 10, so my numbers were a little strange. Smurfs has a $60 million budget and has made close to $140 million overseas. So it's made about $200 million in 6 weeks. But, domestically, it's not doing too well. But
plus, all that bedsheet.
Right. You've got the toys and the bedsheets and the lamps that look like a mushroom. And
got to get the canopy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't seen any.
And the duvet cover.
It's weird. I haven't seen a lot of Smurfs stuff.
Judging by the box office, I don't think there's a lot of demand for
it. Nobody bought it. Unless, it's at like a Hux.
Right. Or it's at the Kroger.
Yeah.
Tied next to the like peanut butter and marshmallows. There's a tie-in, I think really they need, who was it? Hank Azaria?
He was their Gargamel.
Yeah. Maybe that's what we need.
I don't think he is anymore in the live action.
No. Yeah, but in the live action he was. Maybe they're missing some magic there. But that's the box office.
Awesome. Thank you, Kevin.
You're welcome.
I guess that's it for this episode. We'll go around the table and everybody can say where to find them.
This is Dan. You can find me on Twitter at DanGraney67, GRANEY.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at KevinRBrackett and on ReviewSTL.com.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. Don't forget, if you would like to continue the conversation online, you can find us at Facebook.com/RealSpoilers or in our League of Show Sharers Facebook group. All of that is available on the Facebook. You can follow the show on Twitter at RealSpoilers or go to iTunes, subscribe, rate, review. It helps us tremendously. And as always, we greatly appreciate it. So thanks for tuning in. That's it for this episode. Coming up on the next one, we will tackle King Arthur. Can we do a 45 minutes of suck?
Can we do a 5 minutes of suck? Yeah. Can we just do another Monster Squad episode? Because
I would love
the irony of doing Monster Squad without Joe. So yeah. I will consider this. Yeah. So that's it for this time. Until then, you've been warned.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.